The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. A Beltway rocked by the leak of the opinion in Dobbs. And I believe the leak to be true. I have done a first read of the Justice Alito opinion in Dobbs. It overrules Roe and Casey, does so comprehensively. No ands, ifs, or buts. It has allegedly got at least five justices to vote for it. And there are a couple issues that I'll be discussing all day. The decision itself, its implications, and the fact that it was leaked, which is so important to me. I begin, though, the way I've begun the abortion case law teaching for the last 26 years that I've taught con law at Chapman University Fowler School of Law, which with is recognition that in that classroom every year and in the audience today, there are millions of women who have undergone abortion procedures. And it is incumbent upon anyone discussing this to keep in mind that those women are deeply affected by any discussion of the choices that they made. And therefore, respect is the order of the day. I believe that many people have in good faith tried to constitutionalize a right to abortion, sometimes only in the early stages of a pregnancy, sometimes right up until the birth canal is entered by the fetus. And others have said, look, that's a baby from the moment of conception. That's life. And the debate has raged my entire adult life. I am 66 years old. Roe was decided in 1973 when I was a junior in high school. And the horrific and terribly divisive opinion in Roe, even when it was effectively overruled, as Justice Alito notes in his opinion, by Casey, has divided the country for 50 years. And the court did what it needed to do. It appears to have done what it needed to do in overruling it. I want to take a couple of segments, the first three, to read to you some of the key parts of the opinion. It's a 97 pages. That includes appendices, which I will not read to you. But in Dobbs, it begins this way, and this is what you need to hear. Justice Alito delivered the opinion of the court. Remember, this is a leak. It is not unprecedented for justices to change their mind. I do not believe the leaker, a scurrilous individual, a coward who ought to step forward, claim responsibility, and take the consequences, which would be disbarment. They'll be disbarred. They've cast a pall over every clerk on the court. It can only be one of the 36 or so clerks on the court. I doubt very much that any secretary would have done this. Any clerk in the sense of ministerial officers of the court, nor do I believe the Chief Justice or any of his eight colleagues would have authorized this. It's such a scar on the court. It's never happened. It has never happened. No one has ever leaked a draft opinion of the court. So the fanatic must be desperate. In their desperation, they threw all concern for the rule of law aside and they leaked the opinion. But let's read what it says. Justice Alito. Abortion presents a profound moral issue on which Americans hold sharply conflicting views. Some believe fervently that a human person comes into being at conception and that abortion ends an innocent life. Others feel just as strongly that any regulation of abortion invades a woman's right to control her own body and prevents women from achieving full equality. Still others in a third group think that abortion should be allowed under some, but not all, circumstances. And those within this group hold a variety of views about the particular restrictions that should be imposed. For the first 185 years after the adoption of the Constitution, each state was permitted to address this issue in accordance with the views of its citizens. Then, in 1973, this court decided Roe v. Wade. Even though the Constitution makes no mention of abortion, the court held that it confers a broad right to obtain one. It did not claim that American law or the common law had ever recognized such a right, and its survey of history ranged from the constitutionally irrelevant, e.g. its discussion of abortion in antiquity, to the plainly incorrect, e.g. its assertion that abortion was probably never a crime under the common laws. After cataloging a wealth of other information having no bearing on the meaning of the Constitution, the opinion concluded with a numbered set of rules, much like those that might be found in a statute enacted by a legislature. Under this scheme, each trimester of pregnancy was regulated differently, but the most critical line was drawn at roughly the end of the second trimester, which at the time corresponded to the point at which a fetus was thought to achieve viability, i.e., the ability to survive life outside the womb. Although the court acknowledged that states had a legitimate interest in protecting potential life, it found that this interest could not justify any restriction on pre-viability abortions. The court did not explain the basis for this line, and even abortion supporters have found it hard to defend Roe's reasoning. One prominent constitutional scholar wrote that he would, quote, vote for a statute very much like the one the court ended up drafting if he were a legislator. But his assessment of Roe was memorable and brutal. Roe was not constitutional law at all and gave almost no sense of an obligation to be. They're quoting Professor Ely. At the same time, Professor Tribe, very small print. At the time of Roe, 30 states still prohibited abortion at all stages. In the years prior to that decision, about a third of the states had liberalized their laws, but Roe abruptly ended the political process. It imposed the same highly restrictive regime on the entire nation, and it effectively struck down the abortion laws of every state. The Justice Byron White, a member appointed by Jack Kennedy, aptly put it in his dissent. The decision represented the, quote, exercise of raw judicial power, and it sparked a national controversy that has embittered our political culture for a half century. Eventually, in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, 1992, the court revisited Roe, but the members of the court split three ways. Two justices expressed no desire to change Roe in any way. Four others wanted to overrule the decision in its entirety. And the three remaining justices who jointly signed the controlling opinion took a third position. Their opinion did not endorse Roe's reasoning, and it even hinted that one or more of its authors might have reservations about whether the Constitution protects a right to abortion. But the opinion concluded that stare decisis, which calls for prior decisions to be followed in most instances, required adherence to what it calls Roe's central holding, that a state may not constitutionally protect fetal life before viability, even if that holding was wrong. Anything less, the opinion claimed, would undermine respect for this court and the rule of law. Paradoxically, the judgment in Casey did a fair amount of overruling. Several important abortion decisions were overruled in toto, and Roe itself was overruled in part. Casey threw out Roe's trimester scheme and substituted a new rule of uncertain origin under which the states were forbidden to adopt any regulation that imposed an undue burden on a woman's right to have an abortion. The decision provided no clear guidance about the difference between a due and an undue burden, but the three justices who authored the controlling opinion, quote, called the contending sides of a national controversy to end their national division by treating the court's decision as the final settlement of the question of the constitutional right to abortion. As has become increasingly apparent in the intervening years, Casey did not achieve that goal. Americans continue to hold passionate and widely divergent views on abortion, and state legislatures have acted accordingly. Some have recently enacted laws allowing abortion, with a few restrictions, at all stages of pregnancy. Others have tightly restricted abortion beginning well before viability. And in this case, 26 states have expressly asked this court to overrule Roe and Casey and allow the states to regulate or prohibit pre-viability abortion. Before us now is one such law. The state of Mississippi asked us to uphold the constitutionality of a law that generally prohibits an abortion after the 15th week of pregnancy, several weeks before the point at which a fetus is now regarded as viable outside the womb. In defending this law, the state's primary argument is that we should reconsider and overrule Roe and Casey and once again allow each state to regulate abortion as its citizens wish. On the other side, respondents and the Solicitor General ask us to reaffirm Roe and Casey, and they contend that the Mississippi law cannot stand if we do so. Allowing Mississippi to prohibit abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, they argue, would be no different than overruling Casey and Roe. We hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled. The Constitution makes no reference to abortion, and no such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision, including the one on which the defenders of Roe and Casey now chiefly rely, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. That provision has been held to guarantee some rights are not mentioned in the Constitution, but any such right must be deeply rooted in the nation's history and tradition. The right to abortion does not fall within this category. Then it goes on, and I will go on to explain later, that stare decisis is demolished as an argument by Justice Alito's opinion. We'll talk about this. Don't go anywhere. Major case, major decision, major leak, major scandal, major everything, and I'm covering it for you right here live on Tuesday morning, May the 3rd, in the year of our Lord, 2022. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I had intended when I went to bed last night to talk to David Drucker about the Ohio Senate race. The polls are open in the great state of Ohio, and people are choosing between J.D. Vance, Matt Dolan, Jane Timken, Mike Gibbons, and Josh Mandel. I thought we would talk, as we did on Special Report, at length about it, but then some fanatic, for the first time in the history of the United States Supreme Court, leaks a draft opinion, and the world is upside down. Good morning, David. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what I think. I saw it before I went to bed, and at first I just kind of breezed over it, like, oh, there goes another leak. And then I said, well, wait a minute. That's a leak out of the Supreme Court with maybe one of the most consequential decisions to come down in, at least in my lifetime, theoretically. It's how it felt to me. And I'm one of my 50, so for whatever that's worth. And, I don't think anybody knows yet the impact of, of the leak or of the decision. You have the impact of the leak, which from an institutional standpoint, and I'm in the business of wanting leaks, please, everybody send me leaks. But when the Supreme Court and other, important institutions leak something so consequential, I just think it sends a tremor through our system. And so I think we have to digest that. And it's like,
let me comment on that, David. I am repulsed by it. I have taught constitutional law for 25 years. I was in the White House Counsel's Office, Department of Justice. This has never happened before. It's an attack on the rule of law by a fanatic who is upset with the decision of the court to overrule Roe and Casey. And it's scandalous. It's terrible. And you put your finger on it. It sends a tremor through everyone. I mean, are we going to get a leak now when anyone wants to try and influence a court decision? It's an assault on every justice. It's terrible. But the decision is so consequential that it might overshadow the scandal.
Well, I think in the short term, it'll overshadow the leak. But internally, the court is going to have to deal with this and guard against future leaks. And it'll be very interesting and important to watch how Roberts, the Chief Justice, and the rest of the justices decide to handle this. Politically, I don't have anything to compare this to politically in terms of the decision. And so I don't have an initial gut feeling beyond this little voice in my head that has been telling me lately when I've been trying to figure out the implications of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, that I don't know that it will have an impact on the midterm elections this year, but that I could see impacts and a continuation of the abortion debate as it has been in future elections as the country digests this and as more states and their legislatures react to this.
Now, David, I'm with the first initial little voice in your head. The blue states have constitutionalized, their state legislatures have said, or their people by initiative have put abortion into the state constitution. The red states want to get rid of it. And so the reds are going to get redder and the blues are going to get bluer. But I don't think it's going to affect, for example, the race in Ohio. If Tim Ryan tries to run in Ohio, a pro-life state that passed a heartbeat bill that Governor DeWine signed, if he tries to run on this, he'll get blown out. And Tim, as I said on Special Report last night, is a great candidate. He's not going to make that mistake. But then again, no one in California is going to get elected by running to make abortion illegal there. It's just that the lines are drawn, the opinions are settled.
Well, yes and no. I think there's still, for opponents of abortion, going to be an itching to try and change things in blue states. And I think in states that are red or lean red, there's going to be potential upheaval because so far we have seen abortion bans passed that include no exceptions for rape or incest or things like that. And I think that that is going to continue to drive this debate and keep the debate alive despite the overturning of Roe. And a lot of us have speculated over the years, well, if Roe was overturned, it sort of removes this biannual or every 4 years major debate we have. I don't think that's going to go away. And so I think it could drive future presidential elections, even though it's been overturned.
Yeah. And the question that the debate moderator is going to ask is, under the new rational basis test, should the court strike down a complete prohibition on abortion. Because Alito announced it's rational basis review. There are always laws that get struck down, even under the most deferential of standards of review. And if you pass a law banning all abortions, including those which endanger the life of the woman, that will be struck down as unconstitutional.
Well, until that happens, if that's where we're headed, I don't see a change in the level of importance that this issue is in presidential elections as it relates to the choosing of judges. And therefore, I don't know that we know for sure who benefits from that in any particular presidential election and who does not.
But my last question, for those who are never Trump, for those who are pro-life and never Trump, is this not dispositive that it was good that he was elected president?
I don't think so from the viewpoint of those in that position, because they always conceded that one of the benefits of something they didn't want to happen was this or the possibility of this. But when they looked at this holistically, they still felt that on net, the election of Trump was a negative for the country.
Then they have to reconcile that. That is not possible to hold that opinion and genuinely be pro-life. Because only with the election of Donald Trump would this have happened. Only with the nomination and confirmation of three justices would Roe and Casey be consigned to the ash can of bad judicial decisions. David M. Drucker on Twitter, thank you, my friend. I'm coming right back with Byron York, his colleague at the Washington Examiner. Please stay tuned. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside a beltway that is shuddering still. Tremors coming out from the leak of a Supreme Court decision authored by Justice Alito that overturns Roe and Casey, a decision I expected. I did not expect a leak of it. I really didn't, because that is a scar on the court. Joining me to discuss the implications of both the leak and the decision, Byron York of the Washington Examiner, and, of course, you see him on Fox News. Byron, I went to bed, because I have to get up at 4:30 before this happened, so I had to absorb it at 4:30 in the morning. You've had more time to think about it, I gather. What do you think?
Well, I have been trying to think about it this morning. First of all, I turned on Hugh Hewitt to learn from him. But I think there's three really big issues with this. One is the outrageousness of the leak itself. And you're absolutely right. I agree with everything you say. Actually, SCOTUS blog tweeted last night, it is impossible to overstate the earthquake this will cause inside the court in terms of the destruction of trust among the justices and staff.
Yes.
I think that's absolutely true.
And SCOTUS blog is the most nonpartisan objective observer of the court there is.
Exactly. So that was not a partisan remark. I think it was just a statement of fact. So that is huge. And I agree. It's done to try to influence the ultimate decision. We'll see if that works. So it's a big, big thing. As big as this, the bigger thing is, of course, the substance of the decision, which changes. I mean, Roe has been a law for 49 years. It's been controversial for almost all of that. Controversial is too weak a word to use for it. It's been back and to the Supreme Court over and over again. It will change people's lives. It will change relations between the states. It will change all sorts of things. Even as important as that is, I think the third effect could be even more, which is the consequences for the long-term politics of our country. And the reason I think it's so important is, if you've been listening to reaction this morning on the left, there is absolutely full-scale anger. It's going to pour jet fuel on the already existing anger against the checks on the majority in our political system. And by that specifically, I mean the Senate and the Electoral College. And all of that casts legitimacy or illegitimacy on the Supreme Court. I don't know if you saw the photo from Madeleine Albright's funeral at the National Cathedral last week.
No.
In the front row was Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Al Gore. And a lot of Democrats said these are the winners of the popular vote in six of the last seven presidential elections going back to 1992. And, of course, two of them, Hillary Clinton and Al Gore, did not become president. And so you're going to see a lot of commentary to the effect that some of the justices who are on the Supreme Court are on the Supreme Court as a result of presidencies and presidents who did not win the popular vote. And they have been confirmed by Senates that do not represent the majority of American voters because of the constitutional system giving each state two senators, regardless of population. So there's already been a lot of Democratic anger over the years at the Electoral College, at the nature of the Senate, and thus at the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court comes out of those two things. And I think this is just going to just skyrocket after this decision.
Byron, I agree with everything you've said, and I have been watching Twitter. In fact, I'm astonished by the ignorance of so-called experts, or if not ignorance, simple disavowal of the constitutional order. And what you said is absolutely true. Those people did win popular votes, but the constitutional election depends upon the states, and it was set up so that minority rights would be protected, and the Constitution protects the rights of the minority, and it does not allow for the invention of law. Alito goes into all of this in his draft opinion that has been leaked. I hope, I pray, that this hysteria on the left is going to actually make people draw back and say, wait a minute, you're attacking the fundamental order. As Larry Oren likes to say, fundamental things have been afoot in this country for 10 years. And I would respond to that lineup in the National Cathedral by pointing out that Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush ran on abortion being Roe v. Wade being repealed. They appointed three justices, O'Connor, Kennedy, and Souter, who then promptly broke the assumption upon which they were selected. And so Roe should have been overturned 30 years ago. And it's never going to be settled, and it's never going to go away. The states have to decide. But you're right. This is going to be a slugfest. Do you think it has any impact in the immediate? For example, Ohio is voting today. Think it affects anything in Ohio?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it affects anything in Ohio simply because it's just happening within hours here. I heard you say earlier you don't think it's going to have a lot of electoral effect in any event. I'm not sure I agree with that. I do think it fires up a lot of Democrats for the reasons that I was just discussing, and just also for just pure partisan reasons. And, you know, three of the justices were appointed by Trump. Gorsuch is only in because Mitch McConnell held open the seat during the last year of Obama's presidency, all of that stuff that we know. And so I do think it fires up Democratic voters quite a bit.
Okay, law of unintended consequences. They have fired up Democratic voters to the extent they have way too early to matter in the fall. So the fanatic who took away the drama of a July 4th or July 3rd decision by leaking this actually undermined the electoral impact in the fall. Because as you and I both know, we won't be talking about this next week, Byron. There's a war going on.
I disagree a little bit.
Go ahead.
I disagree a little bit with that because, yes, the leak is outrageous for all sorts of reasons. But if this had gone through the normal process and had come out in the first week of July, it would still be an earthquake. And it would and if it's the decision that's in this draft, it would still fire up Democrats. It would still be this historic thing. It would still be all of this stuff. So I think it will have lasting effects. And I cannot tell you which races I think it will affect because I hadn't thought it through that much. But I think that I do think, you know, I've been to a lot of Democratic events, and the discussion, it's often been remarked, I mean, the discussion of abortion and Roe, there's something almost sacramental about it. It is so absolutely fundamentally important to them.
You're right, but you used the right analogy, Byron, when you said it's an earthquake. I've gone through many earthquakes, one where I had to gather up my three then small children and pray that the third one didn't come. The Big Bear quake, and I was in Orange County at the time, and I thought the house was going to fall down. It went on and on and on and on, and it came back. So earthquakes concentrate the mind like hanging, as Samuel Johnson said. But then you go to work, and a week later, you're picking up the rubble, and a month later, no one's talking about Northridge or Big Bear or the San Bernardino or the one in San Francisco during the World Series. Earthquakes just, you know, we got to get on with living. And so I just don't think they can maintain momentum from this. Go ahead.
Well, I think people will be talking about it because Democratic candidates and activists will be talking about it. And so I think that's the difference between, I mean, the earthquake analogy, I think, is good in the sense of just how just sort of earth-shattering this whole decision is. But I think that it'll be kept alive in a campaign context by Democrats who want to keep it alive. And obviously, a lot of, you know, conservative Republicans are going to defend this because this is what they wanted. They've wanted it for a very, very long time.
And Justice Alito's opinion, by the way, is armor for them. He did effectively, I've been saying this for years, but it is an effective repudiation of Roe. I mean, it ridicules Roe. And then it ridicules Casey. And then it runs through the reasons for stare decisis not being applicable, which mirror those of the Chief Justices and Citizens United concurrence. It is their whole cloth defense. He robed everyone who needs to argue it. The question is, do you think any Republicans will figure it out? Because this is a little bit above the average legislator's pay grade.
Yeah, because, listen, I don't think constitutional law is going to be a feature of these campaigns, the emotionalism of Roe in the campaigns. It's certainly not, certainly hasn't been a feature in Democratic politics. I mean, the fact, all the facts that are in Alito's decision, beginning with the simple fact that the right to abortion is simply not in the Constitution, and that it's not going to outlaw abortion, it'll send it back to the states. All of those are things that really are not going to be discussed so much as a woman's right to choose.
The emotional response will be very, very vibrant in blue states, as it will be on the other side in red states, and it will just make red redder and blue bluer. But Byron York will talk about it week after week. We'll see who's right. I don't think it's going to matter much. Byron says, just wait and see. We will see. Thank you, Byron York. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Follow me to the next segment on The Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside a beltway that is shuddering under the leak of the Justice Alito draft opinion in the Dobbs case. When I went to bed last night, I knew David Cortman from the Alliance Defending Freedom, senior counsel for ADF, would be joining me. I thought we would be talking about Shurtleff v. Boston, a 9-0 decision, and we will, but I first have to go to David, seasoned Supreme Court litigator that he is, to get your reaction to both the decision draft, and it looks like it's going to be the case, it's going to be the decision, and the leak. David Cortman, what say you?
Well, I haven't read the opinion yet. I understand it's about 100 pages, so I haven't got to it yet this morning. But I think the leak is an inexcusable breach. I think the problem is that it hurts the integrity of the court. So we'll wait and see the release of the opinion by the court, and we'll continue to pray for overturning Roe versus Wade. I think that's the opinion, obviously, that's problematic. It has, you know, no grounding in the text of the Constitution, no grounding in history. It's been problematic since the beginning. So we'll be interested to see what the court actually does.
Any fair observer and any fair reader of Justice Alito will be persuaded, because he just demolishes. It doesn't make the abortion illegal in the United States. It simply returns it to the states. And he also walks through the stare decisis. I've covered this for 2 hours, so I'm going to come back to it. But I also do not want Shurtleff v. Boston to go undiscovered. Did you have a role in this case, David Cortman?
We filed amicus briefs in the case and followed it all along. And it's been interesting because it kind of felt like a throwback a little bit. You know, where the equal access type cases, yep, you know, of the 80s and 90s were around. So it was interesting that the court was still, this kind of case was still brewing, and that court took it.
Would you explain the facts? I said last night briefly, in many, many years of Boston having a practice of allowing private groups to fly a flag in front of the Boston City Hall and to have a discussion, a set of speeches, only one group had been denied the opportunity to do that, Christian Camp or Camp Christian. I can't remember which it is. And that's so obviously unconstitutional. I'm surprised it made it to the Supreme Court, David. Were you?
I was, because when you follow the case, it was a view of the Establishment Clause, the separation of church and state, that hasn't been around for decades.
Right.
And that is, well, gee, even though we open this, you know, area in front of City Hall and then the flags for whoever wants to come, not only do they put a flag, but they have a little ceremony. So it's not just like someone puts their flag up and leaves. They have an event at the base of the flag. And so we let anybody in who wants to come. But then this camp constitution, that's this Christian camp, comes. They say, no, we're going to violate the Establishment Clause. That's such an antiquated view that you can't treat religious organizations or religious groups the same as everybody else. And that was interesting about the case, that they were still forwarding that antiquated view of what the Establishment Clause
is. David Corbin, long ago and far away, when I was doing pro bono work for a church in San Bernardino that ran into an ignorant city council lawyer who said the Establishment Clause prohibited the zoning that allowed the church to have baseball lights because it would be. Yeah, you run into this occasionally, but it has been 30 years that the court keeps saying 9-0, either free speech or the free exercise clause, one or the other, prevents cities and states from doing this. Do you expect this will settle the matter?
I don't know. And the reason is you would think it would have been settled before this. Even cases, you know, like Coach Kennedy, where they're bringing up the Establishment Clause and endorsement. And even though we know this is a private person speaking, somehow it gets enveloped into what the government's saying. So I think there are always those who don't want to accept what I think is the proper view of the Establishment Clause, who are going to continue to suppress religious freedom, religious speech, whatever their worldview or their agenda is. So I don't know if it's ever the end of it. Hopefully it provides a little more clarity. I wasn't a giant fan of the opinion because it could have made it a lot more clear than it was, because it kind of waffled back and forth. So I think the opinions being issued should give more clarity, so that lower courts and people know exactly what they can and can't do.
And I want people to understand, the decision striking down the city of Boston's discrimination against Camp Christian is on two pillars. One is the free speech pillar, and the other is the free exercise pillar. Four justices put their arms around free exercise. Nine justices put themselves in the correct ruling, striking down the city. But we don't know what the Chief Justice and Justice Barrett think. I think we can extrapolate from Justice Breyer that that's going to be they're always going to want to use the free speech as opposed to the free exercise. There's a reluctance to give some fiber to the free exercise clause. But did you see any tipping of the hand for future free exercise cases in Justice Barrett's decision not to file a concurring opinion or to join in a concurring opinion?
No, you know, the more I learn about the Supreme Court, the less I know. And what I mean by that is every time you think you can, you know, figure out a justice or what's going to happen, you just don't, because you don't know what they're thinking. You don't know what other cases are out there. So it's a little bit difficult to do. What I do know is that the free exercise clause should have the same vigor, if you will, as the free speech clause, right? They're sitting right next to each other, the same types of protections, historically speaking. We talk about strict scrutiny all the time on the program, and that's the most difficult test for the government to meet, and it almost always rules for religious freedom. So we're going closer to that place with recent opinions, but I still think we have a ways to go to protect not only religious people in the country, but non-religious people. The nice thing about the free exercise clause, it protects everyone who practices the faith and everyone who doesn't, because if you don't have true religious freedom, you really don't have any freedom at all.
Now, David, it's impossible to predict the future, obviously. But if the Constitution holds and if the country stays strong, 100 years from now, I think they will look at the period we are exiting where the Constitution was put aside. I mean, the Constitution is not hard. I've said that for years. It was written to be understood by farmers and agrarian business owners, all men, all white, in an era of slavery. We know all the imperfections of the Constitution, and we know how it's been amended. But it was never meant to be Sanskrit, right? It was supposed to be understood. These are not hard concepts. The court made them hard. Do you think that, as I do, that we are exiting that era and going back to just basic, simple, matter-of-fact constitutionalism?
I hope so. I'm not sure we're totally out of it yet. And the reason is, I think there's still people that believe there's this living, breathing constitution that means whatever we say it means today. But I think you're right. I think the principles that were set forth at its origin should be able to apply, even though situation changes and technology changes and culture changes. These are long lasting principles that you apply them. They should endure for as long as we fight for it and allow it.
Now, I want to revert back to Dobbs. You haven't read the opinion yet, so you'll have to trust me on this. Justice Alito says, now, abortion laws passed by the state will be subject to rational basis review. I've tried to explain that, but would you explain that and perhaps comment on my position that if a state were to outlaw all abortions, including those threatening the life of the mother, that that would be struck down under rational basis review?
So rational basis review is there's different forms of how you review government action and what level of an interest the government has to show. So the highest one is compelling. It's got to be national security. It's got to be something really, really big in order for the government interest to override whatever right that is. And then there's intermediate scrutiny, which is the middle. Rational basis is basically if you can come up with any common sense reason, any legitimate reason, the way the court has said it, then that gets upheld. So it's what we call the lowest tier of scrutiny. So, and I think you're right. People have to keep in mind, this doesn't end the right to abortion. It puts it back to the states where it originally was before Roe and Casey. And that's what people sometimes don't remember, that it was the states who regulated this. And in fact, in Roe, it was a Texas law that banned abortions originally, except for the life of the mother. So what's going to happen is it's going to go back to the states. And as you said, it's going to be litigated on each level. And depending on what the rational basis is, I mean, I think we need to stop for a second and say, how valuable as a society do we believe life is? And of course, we at ADF believe from conception to natural death, it's invaluable and it shouldn't be taken for any reason unless your life of the mother you talk about, which is rare. But I think that's the thing. Do we value life as a society? And I think that's the real question we should be asking.
And I want people to understand, rational basis test is not 100% deference to whatever a state by legislative or initiative action does. And the city of Claiborne comes to mind, where the court acted and overturned a law on rational basis review that discriminated against the mentally and intellectually disabled. And so the court will strike down stupidity. That's what I've always told my law students, is the court's not going to stand by and let stupid, irrelevant actions take place. And I think that's going to be the rule here. But the hysteria this morning, David, I want to give you the last minute. Will you accept media interviews today? Will you even talk to people about the Dobbs draft?
I don't know. I haven't read it. I mean, we're more interested not in the draft itself, because what's happening is, rather than talking about the case itself, in other words, rather than talking about, you know, Roe and Casey and where they came from and how they were just invented, there's no support in history and the text of the Constitution. And oddly enough, there's been scholars on both sides of the aisle, if you will, all sides of the aisle, that have criticized Roe since it came out and basically said it just created a right out of whole cloth. So that's really the issue we want to be talking about, not the leak and what's going to happen, are they going to change their minds, but really, is this a right that was ever in the Constitution in the first place?
I agree. And when you read the Alito opinion, you're going to say he's right. And he quotes, by the way, Lawrence Tribe with footnote 3, making the point you just made. David Cortman from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Follow them at ADF Legal on Twitter. Follow me to the next segment. Thank you, David Cortman. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. If you woke up this morning and were stunned to learn that an earthquake occurred overnight, you would be just like me, because I had gone to bed before the leak of Justice Alito's draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade and Casey and the Dobbs case emerged. But I got up at 4:30, read the opinion. I've explained it on Twitter. I'm joined now by Senator Tom Cotton, no mean legal scholar himself, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Good morning, Senator. I know you like to think of Lincoln in a moment like this, and so I expect you to be cautious. But what do you make of the draft opinion, and what do you make of the leak?
Hugh, let me take the leak first. It's a stunning breach of trust by some person at the Supreme Court. And the court, in conjunction with the FBI and Department of Justice, needs to get to the bottom of the leak immediately using every investigative tool necessary, and there needs to be serious consequences for the person responsible for the leak. Second, I think it's probably prudent for the court to just proceed with issuing its judgment today. This case was argued 5 months ago. If you believe that this opinion circulating is, in fact, a draft majority opinion, it's been circulating inside the court for 3 months. There is precedent. It's not common, but there is precedent for the court to issue a brief per curiam decision announcing judgment of a case with opinions to follow. That happened, for instance, in Ex parte Curin Nazi saboteur case in World War II. It was argued, and then the per curiam was released within a day or two, and opinions followed about 90 days later. But given this stunning breach of trust, I don't think it's best for the court's integrity or for our politics to have speculations proceeding for another 7 or 8 weeks until the end of the court's term.
Oh, I agree with that. I think the Chief Justice will have to convene the court this morning and talk about this, because it's a ticking time bomb. This has never happened before. It's not the Pentagon Papers, which is one of many leaks that bedevil every administration. It's the Supreme Court, and every litigant in every court in the United States judiciary is now going to worry about whether or not draft opinions and draft rulings are going to be leaked by clerks who are, you know, not even passing the bar is necessary to be a clerk. And I have to assume it's a clerk. Is that your working assumption, Senator Cotton?
Hugh, I don't want to speculate about who might have leaked the opinion. I do think we need to get to the bottom of it promptly. Again, whoever leaked it, I suspect, is not well-trained in the arts of espionage and misdirection. I doubt that it'll take very long for skilled investigators, such as the FBI has, to figure out exactly who did this. And I said there should be severe consequences. It's just another example, though, of how the far left treats abortion as a singular issue in our politics. You know, Justice Scalia used to talk about how the court has an abortion-only jurisprudence that warps and distorts all of its other cases, for instance, free speech and free assembly cases. And now, apparently, there are some people who are willing to breach trust at the Supreme Court to such a degree that there's really no precedent. I understand there have been some leaks in the past, but typically they tend to be retrospective.
Yes.
Or they are not on such consequential matters.
I actually have never seen this. I've been teaching con law for 25 years. Justice Alito brings up the question of impact of a bad decision on other areas of law. You just alluded to that. One of the reasons you overturn a bad precedent, even when it's 30 years old as Casey or 50 years old as Roe, is because it's distorting the law in order to preserve it, which is what has happened on free speech, for example. Demonstrations have to be so many yards away, things that are never accepted in any other category of law except abortion jurisprudence. So it's a persuasive opinion. What do you think Republicans, there are Republicans running today in Ohio, right? They're going to be asked this by a media that is very pro-abortion rights. It's impossible to deny the reality of the media. How do you counsel them to respond to questions about this today and in the coming weeks?
Well, Hugh, I'm reminded of what our friend Larry Arn says in response to claims that perhaps Shakespeare didn't write Shakespeare's plays or sonnets. Whoever wrote them is pretty darn smart. while I don't want to speculate about the reasons for this leak or where the court is in its deliberations, or where this draft opinion is, whoever wrote it is pretty darn smart, and they understand our Constitution, and they understand I've always made that Roe is an anomaly in the court's jurisprudence. It was right invented out of thin air, contrary to hundreds of years of Anglo-American legal practice. It also, as the opinion suggests, has had a very distorting effect on our politics. Many states were moving in the direction of liberalizing their abortion laws in 1973 when the Supreme Court short-circuited that process of democratic deliberations and compromise. And of course, court does in fact overturn Roe and Casey, contrary to some of the hysterical claims of my liberal colleagues in the Senate, will not all of a sudden impose a far-right vision on the country, as one Democratic senator said. It would simply allow state legislatures, elected representatives of their people, make their decisions on this question as they do on so many other questions. I suspect California will have a fairly liberal abortion regime. States like mine will be more protective of unborn life. States like yours in Virginia will probably fall somewhere in the middle. That will be the outcome of healthy democratic deliberation and debate among the people's representatives, those to nine unelected judges in Washington.
Let me raise a very obscure point, but one which you've alluded to. If the Chief Justice request the FBI. I can't imagine them doing this because we had separate branches here. The FBI would ordinarily investigate a leak on this magnitude, but the Chief Justice and his colleagues may decide, no, we'll leave it to the marshals, because it's not automatically within the purview of the FBI to investigate this. Do you agree with me on that?
No, I don't think it's automatically, Hugh. I'm not sure the marshals are equipped to conduct that kind of investigation or will be directly responsive to the Chief Justice. I'll leave it to his hands and the hands of the court as a whole to decide how they proceed in that investigation. But the investigation must occur, and the person who leaked this draft must be held accountable.
Now, I agree with all that. I want to go to what Byron York and I disagreed on. Byron used the analogy of an earthquake. It is. It's a double earthquake. The first earthquake is the draft decision. The second is the leak. And like the earthquakes I've gone through before in California for many, many years, they matter a lot in the moment. You fear for your life, and you react, overreact often, and you buy the earthquake preparation kit, and then it's gone in a month. You're not thinking about it. What do you think the impact on politics in the United States is if the draft opinion becomes the court's opinion?
Well, I think the pro-life movement, millions of Americans who have toiled in the vineyards for 50 years, trying to protect the most innocent people, will feel that their work has been vindicated, that sometimes labor that seems hard and the results seem remote will see that labor come to fruition. Having worked over the years to elect pro-life presidents and a pro-life Senate majority, I would remind you that Donald Trump said explicitly in the 2016 debates with Hillary Clinton, he thought Roe was wrongly decided and that he would want the Supreme Court to ultimately overturn it and return this questions to the states where so many political and legal questions reside under our constitutional system. So I believe that millions and millions of our voters and activists will see fruits of their labor and will be even more mobilized this fall and in the years ahead. Will some on the left be mobilized as well? Yes, but I would also point out that when the Supreme Court allowed a Texas law to stand, I believe stopped abortion after 6 weeks last September, Democrats predicted this would be a political earthquake and it would lead to a wipeout of Republicans in special elections and the off year elections in places like Virginia and New Jersey. And the exact opposite of that happened.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. Proclamations of political doom are always overstated, always premature, and they always revert to the mean. And the mean is that many activists on both sides of this issue will be energized, but inflation remains the constant in everybody's life. And the ability to provide for your family, the real one, not the theoretical one, the real family, is uppermost in people's mind. I'm just curious if you think there's going to be a withering away of the issue, which is what I think is going to happen. I think the states are going to go about their business and activists will activate and work in the states, but that it will actually yield calm, not more storms.
Well, this is the point that this court of draft opinion makes, the point that Justice Scalia long made as well. By seizing from the state legislatures, the people's elected representatives, this question of abortion in 1973, and then reaffirming it in 1992, the court did not settle this question, as they wrote in Casey. They only supercharged the debate because they did not allow the natural process of liberation and compromise that occurs on so many other questions in our society to occur on this question, again, as it was in many states in 1973. So I do suspect that in many states, they will reach a compromise and they will have a set of laws that govern the practice. And although there will always be some on either side that try to revisit those, that's usually the case, the people's elected representatives liberate and reach compromise that satisfactory to the maximum number of people. And if not, then obviously through the democratic process of electing new governors and new state legislators, the process will continue.
Last question. I think this is so difficult to swallow for so many people. is because it validates the election of Donald Trump. And before that, the decision of Mitch McConnell and you and your other colleagues in the Republican caucus not to hold confirmation hearings for any nominee. It wasn't Merrick Garland specific. It was any nominee because the people were going to decide. And the constitutional majority went to Donald Trump and he appointed three justices and they are going to rule this way. And that means the never Trumpers were never right. Do you think that's what burns so many people on the center and the right, Senator Cotton?
Well, I wouldn't try to get inside their head, Hugh. I would just say that it just as you've seen in the last 12 hours, but you've seen it for years now, a concerted effort by liberals in America to try to stigmatize and delegitimize the court, you know, with Chuck Schumer going to the steps of the Supreme Court and yelling at the justices, prompting the Chief Justice to issue a rebuke in public. Efforts to pack the court, which were renewed last night. People rushing to the Supreme Court last night to protest this as well. I worry that the justices, at least the five justices who are reported to be in the majority, should now need round-the-clock security details, at least until a judgment is issued. This is all part and parcel of the left's effort to intimidate and delegitimize the Supreme Court. It's one of the most dangerous trends in American politics.
You are so right on that note. That's a very sober note, I conclude. Thank you, Senator Cotton. That was a very important point to make. One of the consequences of leaking are just so terrible.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.